Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Full Court, your favorite basketball podcast. Free Court is here to entertain the listeners with a fantastic world of sports, but mostly basketball. This highly amusing podcast will keep you excited like a slam dunk. Enjoy Real Sports Entertainment Network's number one basketball podcast from RSENReport.com. Now, here's your host, Tyler Spence, and your co-host, Brad Miller.
Back on the air. It has been probably 2.5 months since our last show. Due to conflict negotiations, we've settled them with Blog Talk Radio, with the network, and we're back. Although Brad is still in vacation in Iowa, so we'll be missing him. We try to get MLB host Megan Whitaker to fill in for Brad tonight. She's also not going to be able to make it due to an illness. So I'm flying solo tonight, but that's okay. Mainly, the conversation tonight is going to be, of course, you guys all know I'm going to talk about this, the 2-7 Dallas Cowboys and their playoff chances. We were trying to get Reggie Swinton, former Dallas Cowboys receiver, on the show tonight. He was going to be on the show tonight, but he had a prior commitment, so we rescheduled the show, an interview with him. We do got former call screener Danny Golding back on the network. Before we get into anything, Danny, how have you been?
Dude, I've been great. Good to be back here on Blog Talk Radio. And, yeah.
How are you feeling about your 49ers over there, bud?
Well, we're not having the best year. We're kind of in a rebuilding year. However, you know, we made a big move with benching Kaepernick and starting Blaine Gabbert, and I honestly think we could upset the Seahawks next week with Blaine Gabbert.
You think that you can upset Seattle in Seattle with Blaine Gabbert?
I do.
That's mind explaining to me why you have so much confidence in him.
Well, I feel that just like when Kaepernick started out 3 years ago, like, no one knew how to stop him. I think Gabbert might be able to, you know, since the Seahawks don't really know how to stop Blaine Gabbert yet, you know, I think that might be the key.
Oh, I see. So you're going with the whole theory of that Seattle has no game plan for him.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that goes. I'm going to go ahead and move on a little bit. The Dallas Cowboys, they're actually going to have Tony Romo back for the first time since week two when he broke his collarbone. Cowboys have been out with Romo for 7 weeks, a game in which they couldn't even win one. Not one game in 7 weeks. And here's the deal for it on my end. And, you know, when you're in the NFL, you can't lose 7 games in a row. I don't care if you're the worst team in the league. Look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've won 3 games this year. There's no excuse for being able to lose 7 freaking football games in a row, 6 of which they could have won, 6 of which were very winnable games. You look at the Atlanta game, they had a 2-touchdown lead. What happened? They went away from the run in the second half. They became one-dimensional, started making some mistakes, blew that game. Okay, there's your first loss. You know, then they end up losing to the Patriots in a blowout loss. Not going to complain about that, you know, whatever. They lose to the Saints in overtime, a game in which they very easily could have won if they didn't have so many defensive lapses, and they were able to convert more on third down. You look at the Giants game. They actually didn't play that bad in the Giants game offensively or defensively, but special teams was pathetic, awful, horrible, disgusting, you name it. They lost that game. Then you go on to the Eagles in overtime. They lost that game due to poor execution, poor defense. Seattle, same thing. Not being able to convert third downs, not being able to have really an identity in offense. Even though the defense played great, you can't really hold on for too long. They lose that 1-1. Tampa Bay, Once again, lack of offense. Can't finish it out. Okay, there's another loss. Someone has to be held accountable, and that's got to be Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan. Scott Linehan, here's the deal. Jason Garrett's the head coach. He's got to be held accountable. Scott Linehan, the offensive coordinator, has to be held accountable for the fact that this team has not scored a touchdown in three games, three of the last seven games without Romo. Three of seven games and you can't put a freaking touchdown? You can't put a freaking touchdown in the end zone? That is inexcusable. That is absolutely, it's inexcusable. Someone has to be held accountable. And here's my deal with Scott Linehan and why I do not like Scott Linehan as the offensive coordinator and the play caller for this offense. I cannot remember for the life of me when's the last time that team has ran a play-action fake on a third and one or a third and two. Do we even remember what a play-action fake here is in Dallas? Because I'm starting to actually forget. Let's see. A play-action fake. Let's go back to basic junior peewee-style offense because I think that's honestly what those dimwits over in Texas need at this point. A play-action fake is designed to throw the defense off balance by faking it to the running back to keep the defense honest, hoping that there will be a little bit of a hesitation from a defender, allowing a wide receiver to go out into deep separation off of his route. But we don't do that anymore on third one or third and two. We think that a third one or third and two is an automatic run. And Darren McFadden's not a bad running back. He's actually having an okay season, as long as he can stay injury-free, which I'll get to that in a little bit, too. We have a very good offensive line, perhaps the best in the NFL. So I can see why you like to run the ball. But I'm just letting you know, Scott Linehan, it's okay to change it up every once in a while. It's okay to run a play-action fake. You don't have to run on a third one or third and two every single time you have a third one or third and two, because the last 7 weeks, all you've been doing is running third and one, third and two, and the defenses of the opposing teams, you know, unlike, you know, a lot of coaches on our staff, they get it. They understand what we do as far as the highest percentage play calling of what we do in certain types of situations. And if you were to look at a stat sheet on a third and short, it would say Dallas Cowboys run a 23 dive, which if people don't understand football, that means the two back's going to go through the three hole. 23 dive or 24 lead. And, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what we do every time. So, okay, they're going to run it, so we're going to have five down linemen. We're going to have two middle backers that are going to come on a blitz. We're also going to bring a safety into the box to have eight or nine guys stacked in the box to protect that line. And I'm sorry, five to six linemen versus eight to nine guys, you lose that battle. And, yep, that's pretty much exactly what happened. But on Sunday, Dallas decided to do something different on their third and one. We didn't line up in a double tight end play a run. We actually threw the ball this time. But did we do a play action fake? No. An empty set backfield, throwing it deep down the field to Dez. You're not even going to do a play action fake and a shotgun and keep the defense off balance then or put a running back in there? Why are we running an empty back set on third and one? It's the same concept. It's the same thing. Just like when we go to a double tight end formation on third and one or third and two, the defense knows we're going to run the ball, right? So when we go to an empty back formation on third and one or third and two with a quarterback that's obviously not mobile, the defense knows we're going to throw the ball. I don't get it. I don't get it. This is why I can't even necessarily be mad at the fact that Matt Castle and Brandon Wheaton have both played like diddly doo-doo for the last 7 weeks. It's not necessarily 100% their fault. Our creativity on offense is disgusting. It's pathetic. And if stuff doesn't get turned around here, because a lot of you guys are acting like Tony Romo was like Jesus and that the season's going to be saved and he's going to win us 7 games in a row. And I'm a Tony Romo fan. I like Tony Romo. He's a great quarterback. And you know what? Tony Romo's the best quarterback we've had since Aikman. And, you know, I thank God every day that the Dallas Cowboys have Tony Romo, because when we were going through that post-Troy Aikman era, man, of going through quarterback after quarterback after quarterback after quarterback after quarterback, Clint Stoner, Anthony Wright, Chad Hutchinson, Quincy Carter, Ryan Leaf, hell, even Vinny Testaverde, and even Drew Bledsoe. There was a lot of frustration during those years. I'm trying to find who is Aikman's replacement going to be. Unfortunately, we weren't like the Cleveland Browns, and we found him by now. Cleveland Browns have been trying to find whoever their quarterback is going to be for the last 17 years since they came back in the NFL in 1998, but besides the point. So Tony Romo's a good quarterback. I'm glad that we have him, and, you know, he's obviously a very talented elite quarterback. There's no debate in that. There's no disputing that. And this last seven games just show how important he is to the team. But here's the deal. We have to win seven games. Some people say that, you know, 6-1, the last seven, 8-8 will win the division. And I can get why they would think that. But I'm going to say we got to win out just to be safe. Because if you go 6-1, you're going to be 8-8, and you risk one of those other teams slipping to 9-7 or 8-8 and losing out on a tiebreaker. Because, you know, two of the games that we lost in the seven-game stretch have been against the Giants and Eagles. And now we're 2-2 in the division. You have to win your last two division games. You have to be 4-2 in the division. You got to. You got to win your last two games against Washington. So I'm going to say we got to win out. We might have a little bit of a chance to go 6-1. But here's why I just don't see this all happening. Just because Romo's back, the play calling's obviously going to get better. See, I always thought that when you have a player that's missing, when you have a player that's not a part of that identity anymore, isn't that when your offensive coordinator is supposed to really get paid and do what he's supposed to be doing, come up with creative ways to figure out how to get other guys involved? It's almost like Scott Linehan was scared to get other guys involved. He started getting Lucky Whitehead involved a little bit, then he went away from him. We were hearing all these things about Gavin Escobar supposed to be getting involved more. I haven't heard his name in weeks. We're supposed to, you know, hear all these things about our running back by committee with a Kristen Michael and Darren McFadden. Kristen Michael's on the streets now. If our offensive identity is gonna remain like this, and people are gonna be able to guess what we're gonna do, it's not gonna matter if Tony Romo's back or not. It's not gonna matter. If you have an NFL defense that already knows what the play you're running before you run it, what are you expecting? I mean, really, what are you expecting? I don't know. Danny, I'll go ahead and put you back on the air. You don't have any colors yet. Do you see where I'm coming from? Do you agree with me as my thoughts of the of what I've been seeing from the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, I haven't really watched you guys this year, but like I can just tell that you guys have not had a good year, you know. Ever since, you know, Andrew and Roma, you guys have just been bad. And, you know, week one, you know, the game that you were at, you guys started off good, and then just went downhill from there. Kind of like us, you know. I mean, we weren't expected to do anything, but we got to win week one, and after that, it was all downhill, you know what I mean?
I don't know where to go from here with the Cowboys. I think that they'll win this week. I really do. I think that they'll beat Miami. But then they got to play Carolina on Thanksgiving. They got to go on the road against Green Bay. And, I mean, you're talking, you definitely can't go 5-2 in the last seven. You're not going to get in at 7-9, period. You might get in at 6-1, which would be 8-8. You probably do get in if you win out. I just don't know. I think the two Washington games, they can win. I think that the Miami game, they can win. But at Buffalo against the Jets, I think they might split that. I don't know. I really don't know. And that just brings up another point. Let's say the Cowboys are out of playoff contention a couple weeks from now. Why would Romo still remain in there, knowing that he is injury prone and knowing that we would be out? At that point, wouldn't it make sense just to pull him, start Kellen Moore, and not risk Romo getting hurt and being out for part of 2016, right? And here's why a lot of people are probably just like, wait. Start Kellen Moore. I thought Matt Castle was the backup quarterback. Well, technically he is. That's true. But here's my deal. You're going to have not a lottery pick next year, but a top 15 pick, let's say, right? Top 12 pick, let's say. And you already figured out that we got to do something either in the draft or probably in the draft. To make sure that when Romo is gone the next couple of years, when he retires, when he hangs it up, that there's a plan in place and a quarterback that's groomed to take over. Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to go through this whole post-Aikman stuff again, like we did for 6-7 years before we found Romo. Now, the funny thing is, where did we find Tony Romo? Yeah, he was an undrafted free agent from Eastern Illinois. Guy was on our practice squad for a couple of years. We kind of just discovered him. He was on our roster the whole time for 3 years, and then by God, he finally gave him a chance, and we realized that he could ball. Matt Cassel, obviously, is not the future of this team. He's 33 years old. He didn't even win a game for us. He went 0-5. Brandon Wheaton went 0-2, and he's not even in the roster. He's not even on the team anymore. Matt Cassel probably won't even be here next year. So why am I so interested in Kellen Moore? Well, the guy was 30-3 at Boise State for number one, so obviously he knows how to win games. I think he's a very underrated quarterback. And I think he possibly could be the future of this team if you give him a chance, but there's no way of knowing unless you give him a chance. So what I'm trying to say here is if the Cowboys end up losing the next couple of games and they officially are out of playoff contention, the best thing to do would be to start Kellen Moore to see if Kellen Moore would be a guy that would be a good candidate to replace Romo, or if you decide, you know what, it doesn't look like he's going to be the guy, then at least you know, and you won't have to waste a draft pick on somebody like a Jared Goff or a Paxton Lynch or a Boykin that falls to you in the draft. Simple as that. I'll go on with this. Jerry Jones, and here's my problem with Jerry Jones. It's been my problem with Jerry Jones for years. He thinks that he's the head coach. He's not the head coach. He's the general manager. And anybody knows the difference between a general manager and a head coach. The head coach's job is supposed to be to make the decisions on who's starting, who's not starting, who's playing, who's going to make the roster, etc. The general manager's job is to sit his ass in the chair up there. Sit down, shut up, sign players' checks, and have guys evaluate talent. When it was announced week 11 that Tony Romo was coming back to play off of IR, I didn't hear that from Coach Garrett. I didn't even hear it from Tony. All we heard in the media was Jerry Jones said Tony will definitely be playing. I have never gotten an alert on my phone from any other NFL team, and I have all 32 teams streaming on my Bleacher Report app. I have never seen another alert say general manager from the Bills or general manager from the Broncos or general manager from the Colts or the Chiefs or the Texans or the Jaguars or the 49ers or the Seahawks or the Rams or the Lions or the Packers or anybody where it says the general manager said that a so-and-so player will be starting. That's not the general manager's job. That's the head coach's job. Jerry, it's not your job to decide when Romo is starting or not starting. It's Jason Garrett's job. And Jason Garrett, you listen to me, you red-headed puppet. You need to start growing some kahunas, but you're not going to. You're Jerry's yes man. That's the only reason you're on this team anyway. Any other head coach, I'll tell you this, any other head coach that had three mediocre 8-8 seasons and now a 2-7 season, no matter who got injured, would have been fired by now, shit canned. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Bye-bye. You had one good year. You had a good 12-4 season last year when you finally realized that maybe we should have a balanced offensive attack. So you guys had a good balanced offensive attack. Let's go back to last season, why they were so successful, you know, going 12-4 in the regular season, being one play away from the conference championship. You figured out that a good offensive strategy is to be able to run the football and throw the football in a balanced set to throw the defense off. Cool. That's fantastic. Here's my problem. How many years was DeMarco Murray on that roster before you figured out that, you know what, we have a talented running back here. Maybe we can utilize him. You wasted 3 or 4 years of that kid's career. And a lot of people are going to say, well, he was injured. But, you know, actually, he wasn't as injured as a lot of people say he was. He missed far fewer games than guys like, oh, I don't know, Sean Lee. Seems like he can't even get through a half of a season anymore. To be honest, I'm done with the Sean Lee experiment, but that's something for a different day. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. So, Jason Garrett, your job as the head coach is to make the decisions. Your job as the head coach is to basically tell Jerry Jones to shove it and that you're the one making the call for almost playing or not. Jerry, it's not your job. Jerry, want to know why you're not going to fire Jason Garrett? Because you like him as a yes man, because you like to make called shots. Honestly, I don't know why you just don't run the team yourself, because you pretty much are doing Jason's job anyway. You're pretty much the coach talking about how when Tony's going to return or, you know, not return or whatever. So it's one of those situations where, you know, why do you think Jimmy Johnson was fired? Because Jimmy Johnson in the 90s did it his way. He did what the head coach was supposed to do. He told Jerry Jones where he could shove it when Jerry Jones needed to shove it. Jerry didn't like that. Jerry didn't like being proved wrong. Jerry didn't like Jimmy getting all the credit for the Super Bowls. Jerry didn't like Jimmy getting all the credit for those players that Jimmy wanted to draft, by the way. So Jerry told Jimmy he can go kick rocks. Then he hired Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer ended up winning the Super Bowl with those players. Barry Switzer has the nerve, after the Super Bowl win in 96, to shake Jerry Jones' hand. Jerry Jones would stump him, by the way, on the handshake. Said, we did it our way, baby. Yeah, you might have done it your way, jackass, but you did it with Jimmy Johnson's players, and you know that. You did it with Jimmy Johnson's players, and you two jabronis try to take credit for something that Jimmy Johnson built. So what happened? Barry Switzer leaves. We end up going through mediocre season after mediocre season after mediocre season, followed by atrocious seasons with Dave Campo. 5-11, 5-11, 5-11, post-Aikman years. Biggest headaches I've ever seen in my life. You don't even want to know how bad it was waking up on Sunday morning. Pretty much the only day I had off as a kid, because Monday through Friday I'd be at school, Saturday I'd have a football game, Sunday would be the only day off I would have. So I got to spend my day off enjoying, waking up, having some breakfast, doing the homework that I procrastinated on doing that whole week, and watching Chad Hutchinson get his ass kicked year in and year out. Then when he didn't work out, we got to bring in Quincy Carter. He got his ass kicked. Then when that didn't work out, Chad Hutchinson, or Clint Stoner. Then we traded for Ryan freaking Leaf. That didn't work out. So finally we bring in a guy named Bill Parcells. We bring in a guy that actually makes some damn sense. What does he do? His first season, he takes guys like Quincy Carter and Troy Hambrick to the freaking playoffs at a 10-6 record. He discovers that Tony Romo is a pretty solid quarterback. You know what's scary? You know what freaks me out to this day? If Bill Parcells wasn't the head coach during that era, I don't think Tony Romo would have remained on this roster. Because Jerry Jones and some of the other coaches that we've had before, they didn't have a good football sense.
They didn't have a good sense for talent.
Danny, can you go ahead and screen that call, by the way? We got a caller on hold. We're going to go ahead and screen and see what they would like to talk about. I don't even know what to do with this team. If they don't make the playoffs, I don't care what they finish. I don't care if they go 4-3 and they finish the season 6-10. And you know, I know Garrett's going to be like, oh, well, we finished on a good note. Romo and Dez were hurt. Someone has to be held accountable. I don't care if you fire Linehan. I don't care if you fire Garrett, but you got to hold one of these guys accountable. You have to. You got to. I mean, Wade Phelps was fired halfway through the season in 2010 when Romo went down. And they actually had a better – think about that. I think when Romo went down, I think they were like 1-5. They ended up finishing the season 6-10. They ended up finishing the season 4 with a 4-5 record under John Kitna. 9 games without Romo, they managed to win 4. Why the hell couldn't we have won 1 game in the 7-game stretch? Not 1 game? Not 1 game? 1 freaking game? Are you kidding me? 1 game.
You can slack all you want about one game. One game would be a huge difference right now because we're talking about a 2-7 team that's 2.5 games out versus one freaking game would have made this a 1.5 game lead. You win on Sunday in Miami, now you're only a game back. Disgusting, pathetic, awful. And I'm sorry, Cowboys fans, the reality of the situation is we're never going to win diddly squat with Jerry Jones at the helm of this franchise. We've become Jerry Jones' zombies. Every single year, they suck us in. They suck us in trying to make it seem like this is finally the year that they're going to do it, and then they let us down again.
With that, I'm going to go ahead and put on my good friend, A-Train, Cincinnati Bengals fan, former co-host of WrestleRama. A-Train, good to hear from you, my man. How you doing?
Doing good, Tyler. How you doing, man?
Need some water after that rant, but other than that, I'm all right.
Hey, you know what, man? The reason I come on is I have to completely agree with you. As someone who has an owner that likes to run the team like yours does, I know exactly how it feels. You know, every year you think this is the year, and then the team falls apart at the seams because the owner's not doing a good job and not letting the head coach do what he's supposed to do. So I completely agree with you there. Mike Brown is one of the worst. It goes Jerry Jones and Mike Brown. I think it's probably a tie, to be honest.
I think we got the cake on it. Maybe, I don't know. See, the thing with difference between your owner and our owner is both of them make bad decisions, but our owner is way more publicized just because it is the Dallas Cowboys. So you might be right on that. It's just ours gets more media attention.
And also because your team has, you know, in the 90s, you know, you won Super Bowls. And, you know, you guys were very out there, and the Bengals were sucked, basically, in the 90s. So, I mean, I understand where that's coming from. Jerry Jones needs to stop living in the past. He needs to get himself a GM is what he needs to do and stop running it like Mike Brown needs to do. But Mike Brown's going to let go of the Bengals here in a few years anyways. Then we're totally going to be screwed because his daughter's getting it or – man, woman, whatever she is. I got to say, man, I completely agree with you there. You know, I thought maybe you guys could win one or two games without Romo. Brandon Whedon didn't really help anything. And he got cut this week, didn't he? Did I read that right? He got cut this
week? Yeah, he did. And he did. And that actually makes sense because here's the thing, that we signed Whedon a couple of years ago and his contract was running out. Anyway, Matt Castle, we actually traded a draft pick for. Now, it did make sense to me is that they actually cut running back Kristen Michael this week, who we traded a draft pick for. So we basically wasted a draft pick on a guy that carried the ball for us 15 times. That makes no sense to me. And now if McFadden goes down, which we know he probably will because he's, you know, made of glass.
He's injury prone.
Who's going to run the ball?
You guess get his mind. I mean, do I think that maybe Romo coming back, maybe you guys could win out? Possibly. You know, your guys' division isn't that strong anyways.
Yes, but have you seen the schedule? Have you seen the Cowboys' schedule, though? I'll read it off to you right now. At Miami, that's – actually, I think we got to win a game. I actually think we win against Miami this week. But then we play Carolina on Thanksgiving. Not going to be a good game. Not going to be very easy. Then we play on the road against Washington on Monday night, and for whatever reason – the Redskins seem to always get us at least once a year. Then we play at Green Bay. Then we play the Jets at home.
Well,
then we
technically, Tyler, Green Bay has their own little slump as well right now.
They'll get it figured out. Trust me, they'll get it figured out. Then at Buffalo, then against the Redskins. Here's my fear. I think the Cowboys might, if they go 6-1 down that stretch, that puts them at 8-8. I don't know if that gets in because now you're talking about possibly going through tiebreakers. But here's the thing that would really suck. Let's say you go 8-8, you're tied for first in the division, you don't get the tiebreaker, and now you have like the number 19 or number 20 pick in the draft where you could have just tanked and had the number 3. If the season ends today, the Cowboys have the number 2 overall pick. It'd be perfect. They can draft a guy like Jared Goff. He can sit behind Romo for a few years and boom.
Yeah. You know, the thing is here, you know, the same thing here, you know, Tony Romo no one expected him to go down. Because you guys were 2-0. I mean, it looked like you guys were going to sail through, like, the Patriots, the Bengals before they lost Monday night. I'll get to that in a minute. And the Carolina Panthers. It looked like you guys were going to coast through. Then the injury happened, and also Dez Bryant got hurt week one. And also, you know, his attitude's been up for question this past 2 weeks, where he's at and everything else. But I do think you guys could possibly go 6-1 to end of the year. But again, like you said, the tiebreakers. Tiebreakers kill teams constantly. Now, over in the AFC and NFC, in my opinion, are both very weak this year. There's a lot of good teams that are playing very poorly right now, like the Baltimore Ravens lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars Sunday. That sink in for a second, people that are listening right now. The Ravens lost to the Jaguars.
By the way, that was one entertaining game.
I did not see that. I did not get that, sadly, but I heard it was very good. But you know, that's a team you don't expect to go 2-7 this year. You expect them to be in the
hunt. Well, the Chargers too. Look at the San Diego Chargers.
Exactly, and their quarterback has the best passing yardage right now out of any quarterback, and they are 2-7.
And he's my fantasy football quarterback too. So plus,
that is ridiculous. And you know they like to blame the quarterback, but when he's throwing up numbers like that, you got to blame the coaches. And you got to blame the other players on the team. Phillip Rivers is having the best statistic year he has had. His team's only won 2 games.
And he's doing it without Keenan Allen. He did it without Antonio Gates the first 4 weeks due to his suspension. Now he's doing it without Keenan Allen and Malcolm Floyd and Ladarius Green.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
You know,
it's crazy.
Yeah, and then you have the AFC South, where the winning team's going to have a losing record, it looks like. Because Andrew Luck, I believe he's out 4 to 6 weeks, correct? Is that what they're saying?
He's pretty much out for the rest of the season.
Okay. So he'll probably...
They said he's
going to
miss at least 5 weeks. And the thing with Andrew Luck is that at least 5 weeks probably means 7 or 8. He's not having a very good year. He's having a
terrible
year. You guys,
terrible.
I'm going to have to get off for a bit because my friend's about to ride a bull. I'll call the end.
Okay, Danny, no one cares. Bye-bye.
Oh, my.
Anyway.
Shut up, Golding!
I'm cutting him off for the rest of the time. as we were saying,
Andrew Luck.
Golden, I lost my same train of thought. Andrew Luck, horrible, horrible, horrible. I mean, even when I know he's been banged up, and I can't blame Andrew Luck. And here's why I can't completely blame Andrew Luck. Here's why I can't completely blame him, because if you want to talk about bad management, let's talk about bad management for a second. The Indianapolis Colts, statistically last, one of the worst defenses in the league, especially against defending the pass. And in the first round of the draft, you draft a receiver who's now the number – he's the number 4 guy in your depth chart. You're wasting a number 1 pick on Philip Dorsett, who I like. He's a decent player. But, A, you reached for him. He probably could have got him in the 3rd or 4th round. B, you didn't need a receiver. You had T.Y. Hilton. You had Andre Johnson. You had Dante Moncrief. What the hell were you thinking drafting a number 4 receiver? I mean,
exactly.
That's why I can't complain Andrew Luck completely, because – they had the right idea of getting, you know, they got him Frank Gore. They got him Andre Johnson. Even Andre Johnson's been doing nothing this year. They haven't even implemented him in the offense. And you don't address the defense whatsoever? Okay, that makes sense. And do you realize in the AFC South, someone's going to win that division at 6-10?
I know. And if that happens, that's just terrible. That's just awful.
If that happens, that's when they really need to go look at the playoff format and make some really serious considerations. Because when you look at it here, you look at it now, Andrew Luck's out for 5 or 6 weeks, right? I think the leader of that division is the Texans now, because they won on Monday night.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the AFC South right now. You have the Indianapolis Colts that are 4-5. You have the Houston Texans that are 4-5. You have the Jaguars at 3-6 and the Titans at 2-7. How funny would it be if the Jaguars – I hope the Jaguars win that division. That would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious. If Jacksonville,
no, I don't see that happening.
Back.
I
mean,
don't
well,
see that happening.
Thing,
I can
though,
see the
– This has got to be a wake-up call for the MT Smith, total wake-up call. Andrew Luck is down. They won Sunday. This got to be a wake-up call for Bortles to get this team going and get in the playoffs. Because to be honest with you, whoever makes playoffs in the AFC South is probably going to be one and done. They're not going to make it past the first.
Well, here's the thing. Is I actually, if there is going to be a 2-7 team making the playoffs this year, I don't know if it'll be the Cowboys, but I could see it being the Titans.
Oh, jeez.
Well, look at it. Look at it here. Here's the deal. Here's the deal, right? Okay, the Titans play. I'm looking at the Titans schedule right now. The Titans play Jacksonville on Thursday night. I'm taking the Titans to win that game. I think the Titans will beat the Jaguars. Then the Titans host the Raiders at home. I think the Raiders will win that game. I think the Raiders are actually really, really solid this year. Then I think they play the Jaguars.
They finally went out there and got a good coach. And like I said before, Carr is the future of that franchise. Thank goodness he got his talent, not his brother's so-called talent.
Well, I'm not going to blame David Carr because the guy got sacked 70% of the time he went out for a pass. But I'm just looking at the Titans schedule. They play the Jaguars the next, which I don't know where the NFL got out making this schedule. Check this out. Week 11, Tennessee plays at Jacksonville. Week 12, they play the Raiders. Then week 13, they play Jacksonville again. I've never seen it where it's been like that, just so close together. But besides the point, I think they'll go 2-1 in that. Then they play at New York, at New England. Those are probably two losses. Then they host Houston. Then they play at Indianapolis. Indianapolis, when you look at Indianapolis' schedule, let's look at theirs really quick because they're going to be in probably the same boat as what the Cowboys were.
Here's the thing, though. They actually have, in my opinion, they have a decent backup. I mean,
Hasselbeck?
Did you watch Hasselbeck when Hasselbeck was in there,
they barely beat Jacksonville at home. It was a pathetic game, and then they barely beat Houston on the road. They're going to lose to Atlanta this week. There's no doubt about it. They're going to lose to Atlanta. I actually think they might lose to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is not as good bad as people think. Then they play at Pittsburgh.
They're just young. That's all they are. Yeah. They're just young.
Well, let's see. They play. Then Indianapolis plays at Pittsburgh. That's a loss. Then they're at Jacksonville. Honestly, I could see them losing that one. They host Houston. I think they'll win that one. At Miami and then against Tennessee. So I think they'll finish 2-4, which puts them at 6-10. I think the Titans will finish 3-4, catch them at 6-10. Yeah, there's probably going to be a 6-10 division winner.
That'd be insane.
A couple years ago, when the Seahawks won it, they were 7-9, correct, or was it 8-8?
Yes, they were 7-9. Yep, they sure were.
7-9. Okay, that's one thing. 6-10 and making the playoffs. That's unheard of. I don't think that's ever happened.
That's like what happened in California last week.
That was worse. That was an 0-10 team making the playoffs. 0-10.
By the way, they get crushed last week. I just want to know.
I don't know if they played. Let me look. Hold on. I'm going to go back to Brad Miller's timeline. You can go ahead and rant about the Bengals game and how the hell did you – first of all, I have a question for you because this is a fantasy football question. Why are you not – what's up with Jeremy Hill?
You know, he has not been the same person he was last year. I think everyone's got him figured out, because he doesn't really like going towards the middle. You've seen it many a times. He likes to try to go to the outside, but everybody's read on it now. It's nothing new anymore. He's got to come up with something new to get back in that rotation. Giovanni Bernard is having a good year this year. I am surprise is how
Giovanni
Bernard
is a very good player.
Yeah, but last year, you know, he kind of didn't do well, and it was all on Hill, and Hill stepped up. But this year, it's Giovanni Bernard stepping up. And that's what people don't understand. If we don't have guys that can't step up, we have guys behind them that will. And, yes, we lost the Houston Texans. Okay.
Well, and you know what I noticed in that game against Houston is that Andy Dalton went back to being good old Andy Dalton with no deep pass whatsoever, very inaccurate. And he was doing fantastic up until Monday, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Andy Dalton from the past just showed up.
Well, and here's also another thing. Tyler Eifert, how many times are you going to drop balls?
Yeah,
that are thrown
a ton of
right
drop passes. How many times did he drop passes on Sunday? He went from having a fantastic –
he dropped
Tyler
four.
Eifert's a great tight end. Don't get me wrong. Tyler Eifert's a fantastic tight end, but
he
had a horrible game on Sunday.
Yeah. He dropped four, but the one that he had to go back for and dive for, he actually ran the wrong route. He was supposed to cut there, but he kept going because he thought Dalton was going to throw a deep pass. So instead of cutting where he was supposed to, he was supposed to go post, but he decided to keep going. That's what happened with that one. And also, people want to talk about the interception. Well, it would have been different if Jones didn't look up there and be like, ooh, look at the pretty football, just standing there watching it go past him. He was just like, look at the pretty football. It's so pretty. Oh, and Jonathan Joseph got it. I should make a tackle here.
Right.
And also, Raymond Lugan needs to learn how to tackle. I mean, good Lord,
right.
Wrap your hands around the dude. Don't try to do it. It's not two-hand touch. Post-tackle.
Well, and I still think the Bengals, I obviously think that it's not even a question. I don't think the Steelers are going to catch up to them. I think the Bengals win the division.
Oh,
but I don't know.
Brad because, that.
Brad would agree with me on that. He's a realist. But I'm looking forward to Sunday night at Arizona, it's kind of weird, which I don't think has ever happened before, but I could be wrong. Arizona Cardinals are going to have back-to-back Sunday night games. Now, I know it's happened when they flexed, because I know it happened week 17 when Dallas played, I think it was Philly, on Sunday night for whoever the winner got the division, the loser got the wild card.
Yeah.
And it just so happened the wild card game was the Cowboys and Eagles, and they went back-to-back. I don't remember ever seeing in the regular season that the Cardinals, would get back-to-back Sunday night games. But it happened, and you have to go in Arizona.
Well, that wasn't the original Sunday night game, though.
So it wasn't. So did they flex the game, or what happened there?
Well, a couple weeks ago, before the Thursday night game, they announced that the Bengals in Arizona was moved to Sunday night because it was more important than the other one that was happening before.
What was the other one?
I don't remember. I can't tell you.
All right, let me look it up right now. But are you a little – how do you feel about going to that game? Arizona's won three in a row. They're very tough to play in Arizona. They have a very good they have a very good defense. They have a very good offense. How do you feel?
Well, I feel like every loyal fan. I think my team can pull it out. We are pissed off. Andy Dalton's pissed off. If you watch the interview at the end of Monday Night Football, you can tell how mad and agitated he was. They're playing a very ticked-off Bengals team. And also, with that being said, the Houston Texans woke a sleeping giant. The Bengals went into Monday night's game thinking they already won the thing before it even started. They played with no heart Monday night. It was easy to see. The defense played fantastic. Since Burfict's been back, our defense has only allowed 10 points in each game. Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Houston. This defense is a different animal than what Arizona has played. They talk about the Seahawks. Well, Seahawks were beating us 24-7. We came back and beat them in overtime. That defense
breaking
is nothing
news.
Anymore.
breaking
breaking news really quick. I just want to say that our thoughts and prayers go out to Doug Flutie. I just got an alert on my phone that, his mother and his father both passed away earlier today. I guess his father had a heart attack, was admitted to the hospital, and for a heart attack, he was treated there, and he passed away within an hour of arriving. And then his mother actually suffered a heart attack less than about 30 minutes later and passed away at the same time. That's pretty crazy. Doug Flutie released a statement that said that they were both incredible people, and I believe that you truly can die of a broken heart. And when my father went, then my mother decided it was time for me to go with him as well. Wow, that's obviously incredibly – it's kind of one of those bittersweet things. It's sad. It's a very sad situation, but, they went at the same time too. But obviously that's, obviously going to be hard on Doug too with his dad going. And then all of a sudden, an hour later, you just lost your other parent too. I couldn't even imagine. So that just broke about a couple minutes ago that I saw.
Jeez.
But to answer your other question too, that other game that was supposed to be flexing the Sunday night Sunday night game was the San Diego Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs.
No wonder.
So. Yeah, no wonder they were going to flex. Oh, the Chiefs aren't looking too bad right now. They looked great against the game in London when they played Detroit. Granted, it was Detroit. Then they just spanked Denver all over the field. And if you look back, there's a couple of games where Kansas City could have won, including the Denver game earlier in the year. Now, Charkhandrick West, they're not really missing Jamal Charles as much as you thought they would. Charkhandrick West is filling in greatly for that offense.
No, they're really pulling it out. They're trying to make a run for it. And I'm very impressed with what they've done, because when they came to Cincinnati just completely destroyed them. They had a little issue and they fixed it, and look what they're doing now. By the way, I want to talk about one other person, if we could. Is this the end of Peyton Manning?
Yes. Not even a question.
In my opinion,
I don't think
he should
have
retired.
Come back this year.
He should have retired last year, but I think he wanted to break the record, so he decided to stay one more year. But as you can tell, he's not the same Peyton Manning he was, and
nope. He
looks like a former shell of himself. And it's sad to see.
He doesn't even look like that. He looks like one of the worst quarterbacks in NFL history right now. And I get he's been hurt, but even before he got hurt, he looked like crap too.
Exactly. It's sad to watch, because someone you grew up watching that was amazing, and now you're seeing him just fall apart at the seams. It's real sad to watch. When you see someone
play,
it's kind of
like what's going on with Kobe Bryant too. Kobe Bryant's probably going to be his last year, and these guys are going to be remembered for Do you really want to go out this way, or would you have rather gone out with respect?
Exactly. He should have went out a couple years ago when they won the championship again. But
correct.
He decided to stick around.
Correct. I don't know. I think it's definitely the end of Peyton Manning. I think he's done. And obviously Tom Brady's not going anywhere for a while. What a year he's having. But I expected that of Tom, because I knew he was going to be pissed off because of the whole Deflategate situation. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they won it again. Although they did lose Julian Edelman probably the year, and then they lost Deion Lewis, which is huge. So, and that offense really struggled after Edelman went down. So they're going to have to figure out how to utilize LaFell, who hasn't been there, and he hasn't looked great since returning. He's done decently, but his route running still needs to get more fluid. He's still dropping a lot of passes. They have no really third down threat. James White hasn't filled in that Deion Lewis role quite as nicely as they'd hoped, as Deion Lewis filled it in for Shane Vereen. So we'll see. The AFC, I think, is definitely going to take the Super Bowl this year. I don't know who is going to come out of that conference.
The Bengals.
I know you want to be biased, but if you look at that conference, though, you have the Patriots, you have the Bengals, and I could see the Bengals beating the Patriots in the playoffs. I really, really could.
That's what a lot
of
people say. They say that's the team that could beat New England, is Cincinnati. They say no, the team can do it, but Cincinnati.
I'm going to disagree with that. I think Cincinnati can do it, and you're actually going to like this one. I think that Pittsburgh can do it because I believe in Mike Tomlin. I believe in Antonio Brown. If Roethlisberger can get his damn ankle healthy, which he looked healthy on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I know they lost Le'Veon Bell, but D'Angelo Williams is filling in greatly.
Yeah, but look who they were playing against. That team makes anybody look good.
The Browns are who they are. That's exactly right.
By the way, breaking news, Brown season has been saved. Johnny Manziel will start the rest of the year.
Well, you know, another team that could be dangerous if they can get in, which they're only a game out now, is the Chiefs, like we were talking about. They're 4-5.
Exactly.
The Raiders are 4-5. I mean, it's going to be a fun race to see who gets in. I think Pittsburgh will get in. I don't see Buffalo staying in there. I don't see the Jets staying in there. I think the Chiefs or the Raiders are going to battle it out, and one of them is going to get the sixth spot. You have the Dolphins that are 4-5, the Texans that are 4-5, and even the Jaguars only two games out. The AFC is still wide open from top
to
bottom.
I don't know if this is even going to happen. I don't know what their last game is, but wouldn't it be funny if it was the Chiefs versus the Raiders for the wild card spot? It would come down to the
I'm looking right now.
Wouldn't it be interesting though if that was true?
Oh my goodness. Sunday, January 3rd, week 17, Kansas City Chiefs host the Oakland Raiders.
Thank you. I'm awesome. I'm a mind reader. I am awesome.
Wouldn't that be something? And they play the Raiders twice.
You know what? That would be a game I'd watch. Yeah, it's not my thing.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd watch that. And I know for a fact, if it comes down to that, that will be Sunday night game.
Oh, absolutely.
It'd be huge. I could see Pistol 2 on third now going nuts.
Well, if you think about it, too, with the Chiefs, talk about a couple of tough losses. Minnesota game, they could have won. They actually should have won because there was a bad call on Charkandrick West. They gave up the game to Chicago the last second. You know, that was a game they should have won. Green Bay won that Monday night game. They kept trying to fight back. They couldn't get it done. They should have beat Denver. Their 4-5 record could easily be 7-2.
Oh, yeah. And another thing is, what about the Chicago Bears? Aren't they 4-5 now?
Yeah, they're only a couple games out of the wild card.
Wouldn't that be funny if they got in?
I don't think that they will. They play Denver this week. Granted, Peyton Manning's not playing. Osweiler's playing. I don't know what's going to happen in that game. Then they play at Green Bay. They're not going to win at Green Bay.
No.
They play the Niners. That's a win. They play the Redskins.
Yeah.
That's probably a win. They play
Everyone the Niners have left, let's just put a W there for the other team.
Well, let's look at the Niners schedule really quick, and then we'll get off the air. We've had too much fun tonight. The Niners play at Seattle this week. Loss. The Niners host the Cardinals this week, or the following week. Loss. Then they play at Chicago. Probably a loss. They play at Cleveland. They might win one there. Then they host Cincinnati. Loss.
Loss.
They go at Detroit.
You heard me, Danny boy. Loss. Big L, because I know you're going to listen to this later. Big L for you, douchebag.
They play at Detroit. They might win that one. And then they host the Rams. I don't know what to think about the Rams. The Rams are so inconsistent, I'm not even going to try to predict that one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So they probably finish if the best case scenario for the Niners, if somehow they finish 3-4, that finishes them at 6-10 in the year. But they're probably not even going to do that. So Danny believes that Blaine Gabbert, I don't know if you listened to the show earlier, but Danny actually said that Blaine Gabbert could beat the Seahawks on Sunday because Seattle doesn't have any tape on Blaine Gabbert.
Oh my gosh.
I've never heard a more ignorant comment. Seattle doesn't have any tape on Blaine Gabbert.
Just look at Gabbert's past of how bad he is.
Well, no, that's not even the thing that's making me shake my head. It's that he actually had the nerve to say that Seattle doesn't have any tape on Blaine Gabbert because he hasn't played. He played last week, number one, and he played a couple of years in Jacksonville. So there's tape on Blaine Gabbert. It's there. It's there. Yeah, I can't get it. And then he thinks Blaine Gabbert might lead them to the play. Oh, my goodness gracious. I just
don't
even.
The Bengals have a good shot of going at least 14-2, 13-3 this year.
Well, let's look. I'll look at the schedule, and then we'll call it a night for the first show back. At Arizona, sorry to do this. I'm sorry. I'm going to say you're going to lose that game. I got to go with Arizona on the road. But you play St. Louis the
following
week.
For your wedding that I'm invited to, I'm flying out there, and I'm kicking your ass just for saying that.
I'm not done with the rest of the schedule. At Arizona, loss. I can't give you wins every week. I'm not Santa Claus. At Arizona, loss. Versus St. Louis, win. At Cleveland, win. Versus Pittsburgh, win. At San Francisco, win. At Denver, I'm going to say loss. Mile High Stadium. Yeah. Versus Baltimore, win. So you finish the season 13-3. You happy?
Well, here's the thing. I think we won't, if we have a playoff spot locked and the number two seed locked, I don't think we'll play our starters against Baltimore. I think that's a game we will lose if we do not play our
starters.
You
still win. You still beat Baltimore. You play Danny Golden at quarterback, you still beat Baltimore. Baltimore is garbage.
Are you talking about high Danny Golden or non-high Danny Golden?
Both. Baltimore is the ultimate doo-doo I've ever seen. Baltimore could easily be 0-9 this year. You realize that, right? They could be 0-9.
Yeah.
They barely beat San Diego, and it took overtime to beat them at Pittsburgh. We're in a game I don't even think Roethlisberger or Le'Veon Bell played in.
No, Michael Vick was a starter.
Yeah.
And also the reason Pittsburgh lost him was the missed field goal by their former kicker they fired right after that. But,
well,
Baltimore Ravens fans, you could thank Bob from Ravens Red Zone for cursing your team. He said before the season started that the Baltimore Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl this year. But in his words, the Baltimore Ravens, as he calls it, it's with an R, Bob, not W, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year. Yeah. Okay,
yep.
With a 2-7 record.
Yep. Ridiculous. It's like Danny saying the Niners have a playoff shot with Blaine Gabbert. Just ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Poor Danny. He's letting stuff go to his head now.
Oh, my goodness.
After one win, he thinks it's going to happen now. Oh. Get over yourself, Golding.
See, that's the thing. That's the difference between me and him is that I know that even if we beat Miami on Sunday, we're still 3-7. It's still got a long way to go. Still got a long way to go before I can even have confidence. Five games below 500, one win is just going to be nice. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be nice. It's going to be like, how do I want to put this? It's going to be like having sprinkles on your ice cream. It's just nice. It's just, you know, it's just an extra little thing. It's a win. I haven't had a win in 2 months. 2 months.
I was gonna get on you so bad on one of the groups we're in on Facebook. When you started talking, I was like, T. Spence, you have never in the talk. Your team hasn't won a game in 2 months.
when was I talking? Who was I talking crap on?
Eagles low.
Oh, well, I can talk crap on him, and I don't even have to win a game. I can be 0-16, and he could be Super Bowl champion. I'll still talk about it. I don't care. But here's the other deal,
Which team, though? Tampa Bay, because he was a fan of Pirates as a child, or the Eagles?
Or the Redskins, or the Seahawks. I don't know. You tell me. What I will say, though, and what I'll end on this is, they win Sunday in Miami. It's nice. It's just nice. And they got a game 4 days later against Carolina. If they can win that one, okay, 4-7. Okay, I'm not convinced yet. They go ahead and beat Washington the following week on Monday Night Football. Okay, this is very nice.
Yeah.
They go ahead and win the next one. They're 6-7. We'll be like, we're almost there.
They're actually playing really well.
Who?
Washington.
I agree. I agree. They're playing well. I'm just saying, if they can win, it's going to take them to win five games in a row before I start getting any of my hopes up. And if they can go 7-7, and they'll be 7-7, two games left, then I'll be like, okay, we got to win a couple more games. If they can actually, to be honest, if they win seven games, I'm not going to believe anything until I see it. Even if they win the next three, four games in a row, I'm not even going to get my hopes up and be like, oh, we got a chance now. Not doing it, not setting myself up for heartbreak. You're not going to do that to me again, Jerry. You've done it for 25 years. Not doing it anymore, bud.
Hey, now hopefully this is the year my team wins a playoff game. More than that, wins the Super Bowl.
Well, you get a playoff win, I get a Super Bowl. How about that?
You're right.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and end the show. It's been a fun segment back on the air. We'll be taking next week off because of Thanksgiving, but we'll be back the following week on every Wednesday night.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, before we leave, Arizona Cardinals, we're going to beat you Sunday no matter what T-Spence says. He's speaking crazy talk.
Before we leave, and don't give me any spoilers or anything that you've heard of. I don't want any of that stuff. I want to know who you think's going to win. Okay, here's what I think Survivor Series is going to happen. I think Roman Reigns wins, and then everyone's like, oh, my God, Roman Reigns has finally done it. He finally done it after all that adversity, controversy, blah, blah, blah. He's done it. He's the champion. Sheamus cashes in, bitch.
I like how you said you're like Sheamus cashes in, bitch.
Could you see that happening? Because I sure could. He's gonna have to cash in at some point. They're not gonna have to cash in to WrestleMania again.
I could see it, but at the same time, they're talking about making Reigns heel like they did The Rock back in '98 when this whole tournament thing actually happened.
That's kind of where the whole thing with Triple H was going, and that's what they've been doing on Raw with the whole "Who wants to be the new man?" Oh,
exactly.
And Roman said, "No, I'm going to do it my own way." And, that's interesting.
See, no one gets that, but in '98, they had all the matches, as you remember, all the matches were on the card. They didn't have them on Raw weeks before. So, I don't like the whole setup for it. Plain and simple, the Undertaker and Kane fighting that Survivor Series. That's a plus, in my opinion.
They better not have them be jobbers to the Wyatt family. They have to have them go out on top. Because it'll probably be the last time they ever fight together.
Yeah, Undertaker's last night's going to be WrestleMania, and it's probably not going to be Sting. That's what happened at Night of Champions.
Sting got hurt.
Maybe,
Sting, I think, is out.
Yeah, there's
Sting,
yeah.
I think, is done.
Well, when you job for the WWE, when you first you come in, you get jobbed to Triple H to boost his ego, and then you job
for
Seth Rollins and had a decent match with Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins actually won that injured Sting. Sting didn't do anything. It was a bump that went wrong. So they brought Sting in and totally just destroyed him. Stupid.
Yeah, they basically added insult to injury to what they did to WCW in the late 90s, pretty much.
Exactly. I could hear Vince now. Well, I killed WCW again. I put it in the ground. I could hear him now.
Well, and you know, here's my thing with Triple H. Is that, I don't know if you've ever watched this YouTube video. My buddy introduced it to me. It's called I think it's called Wrestling Is Not Real or something. And it's kind of like a cartoon thing. And it talks about Triple H and how he's obsessed with the WWE belt. So what did Triple H do to get close to the WWE belt? Well, he married Stephanie McMahon Helmsley, the owner, you know, had an affair with Stephanie, and then married her, had the owner's daughter, okay? So then he got the belt, you know, like 8, 9, 10 times, even though Stone Cold and The Rock were far superior than Triple H. Triple H screwed him. What does he do? He becomes COO. What does he do in these storylines? He has his man that are under him that are the champions, Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, and now probably going to be Roman Reigns. So he's always close to the belt.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way,
and then
before,
if he doesn't have the belt,
I know you want to end this. Yeah. Well, I know you want to end this, but I want to bring this up to you. Have you watched Raw yet?
From Monday night?
Yes.
Yes, I watched it last night, and
okay.
I have to say some of the segments
were
disgusting.
I'd like to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
That's actually what I want to talk to you about. Paige and Charlotte.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I was never so disgusted in my life. Go ahead and
Rick
ask your question.
You know Ric Flair didn't know about that, right?
About the whole how Paige said that. I mean, the thing that was breaking my heart is Charlotte couldn't even do the segment without crying, breaking in legitimate tears. And then they went on with it anyway. And then Paige looked at her and the whole, oh, well, your brother didn't have a fight left in a minute. And she's like, really?
Yeah, and they
like,
did
if
not
it was
clear story that line, with
Rick. Here's the thing. If it was storyline, that's different. That's completely different. And a lot of people are like, making the excuse of, well, you know, in the Attitude Era, they did this all the time. But that's different. That was storyline. That was storyline deaths. That was storyline stuff that was not real. Reed Flair really died. And they basically just made fun of it. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my ears what I was hearing.
Now, you see, I haven't watched it yet, but I got a phone call from DeBerg about it. He called me and said, dude, you need to hear about this. Like, what's going on? He goes, they start talking crap about Reed's death on Raw, and they didn't go to Ric Flair for permission. Because Ric Flair wanted
Well, his mom
it
didn't
TV.
Know either. His mom tweeted out about it.
They were both in, he said on his podcast, they were both in tears talking to each other on the phone. Because she asked if he knew anything about it. He said, I had no idea.
Here's the other thing. Ric Flair and Vince McMahon were never very close.
No. No.
Ric Flair has let me put it this way. Ric Flair has the kahunas to go into Vince McMahon's office and go to that writer's office and raise hell. And I could see there being a lot of controversy before Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Over that segment.
It was very distasteful. You know, but here's the thing, man. This is what WWE has done the last 10 years. They used Eddie Guerrero's death. They used Paul Bearer's death for the CM Punk.
I don't remember them using
storyline.
Eddie Guerrero's death. When did they use Eddie Guerrero's death?
Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio.
Okay.
You know,
I knew they used
Paul
Bearer's
Eddie's,
death.
Eddie's not up there. Eddie's down there in hell. Crap.
Oh,
that
that's right.
Down. So they've used deaths, real actual deaths in storylines, and make it so distasteful. They have failed Hollywood writers writing their stuff, and you can see why they failed. They're terrible at it.
All the writers lightly have been.
Could sit in a room and write up a better show than they can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, easily, easily. I could sit down and I could write Survivor Series and make it the best Survivor Series. And I know I'm acting like Donald Trump right now. He's saying a lot of stuff. But
vote,
I could, we could
Trump,
easily make
gentlemen.
We get, well, we can easily make this the best Survivor Series. I already said how to do it.
Exactly. Reigns has done it. Oh, shit, here comes Sheamus.
That's pretty much what you got to do. Here's what, before we get off the air, it's because WWE Ric Flair said he wasn't told about it beforehand and cried while he was watching it. Oh, wow. Okay, this is what he said. You know, here's the problem. I obviously have an opinion, but I'm afraid to voice it because I don't want anything to affect Ashley's career. It's just Charlotte. Charlotte's real name, correct? I would just say that I know that Hunter and Stephanie and Michael Hayes have her back. I think of anything that could be considered negative, I don't think she feels like she's comfortable enough to say no to anything yet. She's only been up there 3 months, and it's a pressure cooker. It's a tough spot to be in. Even though she's a champion, doesn't mean she goes, hey, this is what I want to do, and this is what I want and want to do. I think if they asked her to do something, that she pretty much would do anything that they asked. So 10 days in Europe with the Raw group, the Red Tour, which is half the guys, and I just think that they're walking on pins and needles. Just because you're a champion doesn't mean that you have the right to say no. If somebody writes it down, one person approves everything. Does that make sense? So I really don't have an opinion. I was very sensitive to it, obviously, because it's a very sensitive issue. It's still very new. I know her mom is on fire, but I'm not going to. I can't just go out on a limb and say what I think. For what it was and what it, I think it was intense. I think the full apart was as good as Brock Lesnar and Taker, considering it was women. I think Ashley didn't retake some words out of context. this I've seen from a woman in TV all the time. She dealt with emotions. She wants physical skills as being second to none, man, in the company. So I get the whole fact that okay, here's my deal. I get it. I get that it's a contract signing. I get that it's a Divas contract signing. I get that you got to make it, you know, actually look, because those don't happen. Those are really rare. I don't remember the last time I've seen a Divas contract signing. But I don't think that you had to go there to make it, you know, go to that level.
Exactly.
I mean, when Brock and Taker, remember when Brock and Taker brawled it out in that arena a couple months ago for SummerSlam, and it took the entire guys to separate them? You want to know what they said to each other? It's not a damn word.
I'll kill you.
They didn't even say a damn word. They just went after it.
But at the end, you heard Brock Lesnar say, "I'll kill you," and Undertaker's like, "You're going to have to."
Yeah, but still, same point. All right, we've been on the air long enough. We're actually going to go off the air in a couple of minutes. So we're going to go ahead and end the show now. We'll be back on Wednesday, December 2nd at 7 p.m. Next week, we'll be off for Thanksgiving. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving holiday. Stay safe. Do not text and drive. Good night.